once again to everybody out there at TFMR. It is Thursday, January 25th. This is our first A to A of 2018. A to A, of course, being our award-winning, prize-winning webinar format where you, the subscriber at TFMR, get to interact, ask questions of movers and shakers all throughout the precious metals industry, the internet in general. You've granted me this access, and so thus I grant this access to you through this format. And so our first A to A of 2018 is probably one of our most requested guests that I've ever had. And we're talking, of course, about Cliff High. If you don't know Cliff and his work with the WebBot program, you can find everything you want to know at his website, halfpasthuman, no spaces, .com. Cliff, I could describe this. I mean, I printed off a biography that I found for you online.
It's probably false.
Yeah, no kidding. I'll just let you just take a second and explain to everybody how it is you do what you do, how you came to do what you do, and what they can find at Half Past Human.
I do predictive linguistics. I try and give us a snapshot of the future in immediate terms, short-term and long-term values. It's done by aggregating non-conscious speech leaks that everybody has when they interact on the internet. And I aggregate these in the tens of millions, boil them down to a thick syrupy mass, spread them out, and have a look at them like the entrails of the internet, and we make some forecasts here about what's going on. It's about 50% correct in general terms with things like weather and this sort of thing. So we're twice as good as chance, but when it comes to cryptos, because the language for all things cryptocurrency is new words being created, new meanings, and so on, I figure we're at least 75 or 80% accurate at this point with the crypto forecasts, including the timing. And it has to do with the language not being as ambiguous as the general language in the general discourse of the body politic.
Sure.
And you can find this sort of stuff. I coined the term predictive linguistics in the early 90s when I came up with the idea. Nowadays, there's dozens and dozens and dozens of companies taking the same sort of approach with their own version of software that they go at this same kind of goal.
I got to tell you, too. I mean, you think about that. I mean, anybody could sit here and say, you know, rub their fuzzy chin and say, well, I really think that this is going to happen in the next few weeks or months and all that stuff. But the random chance that you'll occasionally be right, you know, is going to happen. But to be 75% correct, I mean, that's remarkable, Cliff. That's incredible.
Well, it's staggering. Scary. Yeah, it's scary. It means I got to watch out. People recognize me and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. The wrong people sometimes.
Well, there's right, that so, too. Yeah.
So to get these reports, people go to Half Past Human. And
you go to halfpasthuman.com, and there's a button there, purchase reports, and it goes to a page, and I've got them all laid out going back forever so that we've got a historical record of it all.
And what's kind of fun is, would it be fair to describe you as a, I guess the term we all use for ourselves, a gold bug, a silver bug, somebody that's interested in precious metals at the same time?
I'm interested in them. I don't have the emotional attachment, so I wouldn't personally use the word bug. Okay, I've actually got that quantified. And in my system, you've got to have you've got to have 45.8 in emotional tones around that word for it to be applied that way. And I don't have that. I'm not that emotional about it. It was purely a calculated, reasoned approach to savings.
Fair enough. Well, you know what? Let's just start there. I always get to ask the first question. Let's just take that one. What caught your eye? What is behind that reasoned approach? What is your fundamental rationale there?
Okay. So as a young man, you're always poor. You're trying to support your family. You're living paycheck to paycheck. As you grow, you accumulate you have acumen in whatever trade or profession you're following. At some point you start gaining a little bit more than your spending rate. And this we call savings when you decide to dispose of it for the future manner. If you're just, you know, frittering it away in beer, we don't call it savings. But when you want to save something, it occurred to me that, it doesn't make a lot of sense to save in fiat currency when they're printing and there's an unlimited supply of it and they're continually debasing, and their small target is to rob you of 2% of its value every year. So that struck me as a non sequitur, a non-computational thought. It made no sense whatsoever. Gold and silver seem to be the, or precious metals in general, because for a while I was very interested in the rare earths. And but it seemed to me it to be a better approach to this because it was outside the fiat system, and therefore when you had to come back into the fiat system, the presumed idea was that you would have actually have been able to save purchasing power.
Right. And thus the connection to crypto as well. And I think everybody out there listening that's a part of TFMR, I mean, for crying out loud, how many times you heard me say the same thing? I mean, this is robbery in a sense that you save your accumulated hard work that you don't spend is your savings. And the bankers are constantly stealing it from you by devaluing that currency that you're saving in. So anyway, you and I are coming
It
at it
is,
from the
it's
same
direct
direction.
robbery. There's no equivocation there whatsoever.
Okay. So anyway, Cliff, here's the deal. We use this format, like I said, so that people can submit questions directly to the guest. We've got a pile of people listening to us who are already, what do we have, about five or six in queue. If you have a question for Cliff, we'll do our best to get to it eventually. Click the questions tab in that GoToWebinar control panel that popped up on your screen when you logged in. You type in a question, it comes to me. And I, as the producer, director, and host, will kind of screen it and pass it along. But before we get to all of the questions in queue, Cliff, my goodness gracious, did you elicit a response from people that couldn't join us today? And they fired off, my gosh, I guess I probably printed off about 20 questions out of my email. I try to consolidate them down into what I have here, a list of seven. So again, if you don't hear your question asked, word for word, I tried to pick off as many as I could and group them into these seven. So, my friend, if you are ready to roll, we might as well just get
Sure.
started.
Let's do it. Yep.
All right, we're going to start with, I guess, a general category, in a general sense, the cryptos, because as you said, and as everybody realizes this, and this is why you're in such hot demand. I mean, you've just been nailing it with the cryptos for the reasons that you described here for quite a while. So, in a general sense, what do you see for the cryptos in 2018? And do you think, and this just maybe just gets into your opinion, do you think that this introduction of the futures trading on Bitcoin by the CME, do you think that may have an impact, in opening up this kind of closed loop? And thus be detrimental to Bitcoin in the future.
Taking that last bit first, no, I don't see that. The Bitcoin is already an open system in that regard. It's more dangerous for the futures producers, the companies that are actually offering those, than it is for anybody involved in Bitcoin. It may or the recent opening of these futures may or may not have had some marginal impact on the price of Bitcoin, but let's be clear about this. My data sets were showing that we would still be in the range of 13,880 in the mid-February, and they were showing this back in November and December of 2016. And I first started talking about it in those months, and then into early 2017. All of these were before any knowledge of any kind of futures market was out, and at that same time, it was about 3 months before I showed any sign of the futures markets developing within the data sets. So the supposition on my part, my opinion is that the 13,880 price is independent of the futures market. And then the data sets around the futures market were ominously filled with bad portents and omen kind of language for the CME and the other guys relative to their futures.
Sweet.
So it's not going to be doing them any good. And the problem has to
Good.
do exactly with the open versus closed system aspect of it.
Okay. So, I'll go back. Yes, I recall all those forecasts because people were everywhere I went, I was seeing those forecasts of 13, whatever it was, 888 by February of 2018. the fact that we rushed up to 20 and then fell back to 10 doesn't mean we're not going to still be 13,888 next month, right?
Correct. Correct. I don't get that many numbers. The 20,000 was interesting at the time, but it was so brief that the emotional duration value of it was a mere week. And that is in comparison to the $23,000 price I've got with a duration value that goes several months. And that'll occur in this year, probably. I'm thinking very early spring. It's a different sort of a critter in that sense. So the 13,880 was going to be a very emotionally fulfilling or satisfying number when it is left behind, because it's going to form a really solid floor for us. And it's the same kind of language that I got about the 408 to 428 loop that we would go through three times. And the same sorts of language were in a set all about the, once we got through that third time on 428, never to be visited again. And so we've had for this past year, we've had the same kind of language about 13,880.
Fabulous. So I would imagine the forecast, it just continues higher. I mean, you just see.
We have some big drops, of course, because of the nature of Bitcoin. So let's be very clear about this. And there's also another impact. But in general, over 2018, the forecast is for a repeat of the same kind of percentage gains, sort of, that we saw in 2017. I say sort of because we're going to have a whole lot more cryptos pouring into our source pool, so to speak, in March, April, May. And that's going to dilute somewhat the overall effect of the percentage increase. So some of these things will pop off in May, be fantastically well received, and they may have a 10 or 20,000 percent increase in value this year, which of course skews all of our other more general averages, so to speak.
Wow. The second part of that first question, as I compile them, do you see much in your data sets of the term petrodollar, petrowan? You know, because so many of us are intrigued by what may happen when China starts trading that yuan-denominated crude oil contract, which keeps getting put off. Are you seeing much in reference to that?
There's a lot of language around it. We have to be careful with such terms because although they're non-ambiguous, they are more consciously focused than general language. And so because they're more consciously focused, there's a certain rules that we apply to that sort of language. Now, so the data sets around the petrodollar are not good. There's no particular date forecast for its cessation. But the general sense of crumbling and falling and being a debilitated, lame, any kind of language that you want to think about relative to stumbling and not being very robust is there. So that my supposition is it's going to be a faster rate of slide than we've seen in the past for its presumed value. Now, the oil-based yuan actually falls as a subset within what we could generalize as a commodity-attached currency, whether it's fiat or crypto, it's going to start fading. The differences are going to start fading. And so the petrowan is going to have a huge impact, but curiously, the larger impacts we see initially within the immediacy language, which is about, and I'd have to go back and look to be sure, but I think it's early May of this year. We see much larger impacts on the oil producing states in the Americas. And I don't know if this is because of and I don't mean necessarily North America. I'm talking about Venezuela, all of the Central America, et cetera, and Mexico. I think maybe there's going to be some kind of, not a new OPEC, but a new buying or selling consortium that will involve the Americas as well as China. So there's going to be a real tight connection there. And then there's, all kinds of chaos about Saudi Arabia. So on the petrodollar side, I don't know if it's the economics of it that's going to be the real issue this year or if it's going to be the politics.
Yeah. And they kind of go hand in glove sometimes. I want to skip down to down the list to questions because I think it segues in well. A lot of folks wondering if you're seeing any suggestion on some of these new asset-backed cryptos that are coming out. You know, Venezuela's got their one that they're apparently trying to back. Zimbabwe even announced backing their regular currency, I think, yesterday was something. But then we've got some of these new coins that are out there. Andrew McGuire talking about something this week. Are you hearing much about that? Do you have any thoughts about those?
Tons and tons of stuff in the data about that. It's a very large temporal marker for major moves within crypto space, major moves within the global fiat sphere. Negative for fiat, but I'm waiting for very specific language around the asset-based cryptos, because a lot of them are going to fail. I don't know how many, but let's just say maybe 9 out of 10 of the early ones.
Sure.
And a lot of them are going to show up as failing because there's no legal tie between a crypto claim on the asset and the asset itself. And thus the assets could be seized independent of the crypto claim on it and would invalidate the whole coin, so to speak, right?
Right.
So what we're waiting for is a conjunction of, I think, 3 or 4 sets of language that give us about 300 words in our temporal marker. I would expect maybe at least half of those to show up in the articles around it. But I'm actually waiting for it to arise out of China or Asia rather than some of these others that we've seen appear so far. And the ones around the precious metals, I'm extremely wary of, because as we go forward here, the governments in many areas are going to get very rapacious, and they're going to, according to our data sets, come on in and seize assets. Well, the data sets are actually manifesting, as we've had a number of years back, with the actions that are going on in Saudi Arabia at the moment. This won't be the end of it. There will be a number of states that will take that. A number of governments, sovereign organizations, criminal gangs, whatever we want to call them, that will take the approach of squeezing all of their millionaires and billionaires to try and get cash to sustain it.
Yep. And for everybody listening, we can only go to about the top of the hour. So we've got about 40 minutes. So I'm going to try to keep things moving along so we can get as many questions as we can, because the pile is deep. Cliff, that does kind of segue perfectly into the next question. You've admitted even earlier in this call how frustrating it is to deal with the metals because they're so manipulated. So the language doesn't quite work as well. And I know you've vented some frustration in the past with predictions regarding silver, but what do you see at least going forward? Do you think, you know, because of the bullion bank manipulation, I mean, can that end? Do you think maybe blockchain and these cryptos could have something to do with ending it? Anything there?
The data sets have had a conjunction of the cryptocurrencies and silver as being the final nails in the coffin for the manipulation of the precious metals. Our problem at this stage relative to my data is that I don't have a date for that to occur. I have that temporal marker group of about 300 words that go to the idea of an ICO that is temporally associated with silver, has a good design relative to silver, and has a very good acceptance. And I think, this is my opinion, the data sets would pile up that data in such a way that I'm of the opinion that we'll see this move in the early part of March. I would say that if I'm correct, I should see some of the temporal language I'm looking for, some of the temporal marker language I'm looking for before like the 13th of March. And that would be a little ahead of what we might think of as the generalized breakout in silver.
I'm sitting here listening to you and I'm thinking the next person I have to call is my friend Andrew McGuire, because you may not have heard, he's been working on this for like a year. He's got this coin that's finally ready to ICO. And the paper's coming out, I think, even still later this week. But it is, its primary distribution is, at least initially, is in Asia. And it's also gold and silver backed. And I'm thinking, those two things you just discussed about being something that could really disrupt the market, that sounds like exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, and from our data sets, it shows that it's like sort of kicking in the back door kind of thing. It's not the prima facie case for it. It's this, I guess we'd have to put it under the category of administration or perhaps legal or something along those lines. So when that coin comes on out, we'll find that the manipulators are in trouble on the accounting side of it. Let's just put it that way.
Tell Andy this. He's going to love that. That's awesome. Okay. Anyway, moving on. I've got a couple of these emailed questions left, and then we'll get to some of the listener questions. Somebody wanted me to ask you about, I guess these are, I don't know if they're your temporal markers or they're just terms that you've used frequently here recently. The terms free energy and also alien technology in Antarctica. Can you just take a couple minutes to explain those two terms?
Sure. Free energy comes from what is variously called the ether, dark matter, this kind of thing. It really is nothing like that. It's simply inducing an electric current in a machine where the induction is created by forces at a quantum level. And that quantum level entanglement or entrainment is induced as an electrical charge in devices, so that once you've got the device built, that's basically 100% of your capital cost. Your operating costs might be, a dust rag to keep the dust off of it over the course of a year because there's just no source material there. It doesn't burn anything. It's our free energy, no pollution, etc. There's been a number of these devices that have been developed over the centuries, the last 2 centuries specifically, and they've been rounded up and put away because they were anti petroleum. But our data sets are showing a convergence of things such that petroleum is going to be much more valuable in the 2020s and 2030s as a source for new materials, very interesting and interactive kind of materials that will be developed from what we might think of as plastics that will be petroleum based. So that's the free energy component. In Antarctica, we have a situation of where there was a continent that was frozen very rapidly. It wasn't 3 million years ago. All of the stuff we know about Antarctica is wrong. And there are a number of governments on the continent there now that are in the process of putting together or have already put together compartmentalized special access projects that are currently harvesting what I think of and what I tag as space alien technology, although it might actually be ancient human technology for all I know, because I don't know, because they haven't given me any access to the
Sure.
actual stuff. But we know that this is the case because, and it's been continually validated, because out of Antarctica we keep getting these weird rays that are picked up on the MMIC, the microwave satellites. And so they show up and they're coming right out of Antarctica. So someone down there found something and they're testing it.
Fascinating. I regret that I have to move on, because I think that's really some interesting, because we all know they're down there. I mean, the news reports are there that all these different countries are staking claims and such.
Sure, and you can actually go on Google Earth and any number of NASA satellite images of Antarctica, go to the higher resolution TIFF files, zoom in, and just creep around on the coastline and see far more signs of civilization and habitation than should exist, and far more than they're telling us about.
All right. We've kind of touched on this one earlier, but again, this is kind of a collection of questions that came in by email. Anything in your recent data regarding mining shares, commodities, and the dollar?
Dollar is in a world of hurt. The data sets show that by 2022 in the United States, it will be a minor currency, still being used, but a minor currency. And that's the depreciation to that status will occur over these next couple of years episodically in big steps down. Beyond that, I really don't know that I've got anything meaningful to say about the shape of the downward spiral of the dollar and the economics around it. But it's not, the curious part is that it's not in our data set showing as being simultaneous with a very large drawdown in the social order or civilization here in the USA. So we see, in fact, burgeoning new businesses and all of this sort of thing on the crypto side coming through as the dollar economy is crumbling, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. No, I can imagine that. That's interesting, though, that that shows up on that timeline, because I think a lot of folks have a similar timeline in mind. Two more questions. Something you'd mentioned earlier, I guess, about gold perhaps going to be 25% of the value of Bitcoin here in 2018. Yeah. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that is essentially where we're at now, though. Okay, so the data sets had 13,888 for Bitcoin. 13,880 is how I characterize it. And at the same time, because we rarely get numbers that come through the processing, but at the same time, there was a relationship established in our data sets that were showing that gold was about a quarter of the value of the Bitcoin at that time. Now, here's where we start running into problems.
Yeah.
The actual traded, manipulated value of gold is significantly less than that. It's about, what, a tenth of a Bitcoin or something.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, if you go to a lot of these other indicators that are available on the net around which chatter can develop, such as the debt clock, right? Because the debt clock is showing that gold is worth about $5,800 and some odd dollars,
right?
And right at this moment. And so, and it was commensurate with reaching 20,000 in Bitcoin in December. I mean, it was simultaneous with that we first hit this 5,000 mark. So we did achieve a 25% relationship, in at least in that venue. Now, do the people owning gold have that benefit? No, not yet. But I'm of the opinion that this was a prescient hint from universe as to how 2018 will roll out. So I would suspect that because the data sets are showing us this relative value, that we have two possible paths. One of them is that it's a momentary condition. And that is that at some point we'll actually achieve the ability to sell gold for one quarter of a Bitcoin, ounce for one quarter of a Bitcoin. And in that path, that might last a week, a month or something, but would be temporary. Or it could be that the data sets are providing us a relationship that will maintain over the course of the rest of this year. Uh-huh. Which case, if that were the case, then as Bitcoin would rise, I would suspect that the value of an ounce of gold would also rise. Although there's nothing in the data sets that I can say at this point that would give me a clear indication as to which of those two paths we're likely to fall into. But at some point during the year, we may indeed reach the 5,000, but it's kind of relative to a $20,000 Bitcoin. And if that's the case, I would think that we'd be looking at March, April, May kind of a time frame. So very much into spring, because I don't think we'll get to 23,000, our next number on Bitcoin, until we really get in seriously into spring. And then at that point, we may see that gold will continue to rise over the rest of the year. The conditions at the time that occurs would be the guide that someone would use as to whether or not to try and, quote, take profits.
Right. Okay. Lastly, from the emailed in questions, just a lot of folks wanting to know if your work is showing you this, or if you just simply have a personal couple of favorites in the crypto space, a couple of coins that you prefer.
I never put any of those that I prefer in there, simply because the only reason I prefer them is because of the code base, not because of any kind of a general adoption rate or value or any of that. So my preferences I try and keep out, simply because they're much more techie focused. And just because it's a really interesting coin doesn't necessarily mean it's going to have huge increase in value or any of this kind of stuff. So I actually really like Cloak Coin, right? And Monero. But in general, they're not huge hits in the crypto market space. And the reason I like them is because of the code. Now, there have been times that I'll let that preference intrude, and it's meaningful under those, because I hate Ripple. I love shit talking Ripple because it's crap code, and it's a banker coin. It's not mined, et
right.
cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And Ripple, you've got to watch out for, as recent events have shown us. But other than that, I'm a real fan of Bitcoin, and I'm a real fan of Litecoin. Litecoin is a clone of Bitcoin. Bitcoin did the issue of the looping constructs within the script language perfectly, in my opinion, because it removed huge amounts of attack surface. And now they'll be able to use rootstock on both Bitcoin and Litecoin to run smart contracts. So we're going to see. So in this case, because I like them technically and because I know what's going on technically, I can say, aha, there's going to be increased value for both of these coins as we go through this year on the basis of what's going on the smart contract layer.
All of that just went right over my head, but I do own some Litecoin, so I'm happy to hear you say that.
Well, Litecoin actually shows up as doing slightly better than gold, because even though it's showing as 1/5 of Bitcoin, it's going to scale with Bitcoin. So right, we know for sure it's going to follow that trail.
Right. Okay. All right, my friend. I've got, 8 or 9 questions in queue. So we'll move into those next. Again, if you have a question for Cliff, this is your chance to ask him directly. Just click the questions tab on your GoToWebinar control panel, type it in, and I will pass it along. Let's start with question number one. This comes from someone who joins us on a regular basis for these, InfoMetron, who says, ask these questions. What is your view of the nature of consciousness? And how has that view informed and been informed by your development of predictive linguistics?
My view of the nature of consciousness is, of course, still evolving. We'll continuously do so throughout all of our lives and all of my lives. But the nature of consciousness, I think it is safe to say that consciousness is, and everything else comes from it, and that consciousness cannot be altered. You can't enhance it. You can't have altered states of it. It can't be changed. You're not ever going to ascend. You're never going to have a different kind of consciousness. You are consciousness. And thereafter, everything derives from that statement. So in that regard, it's the primal basis for our understanding of reality. And it has been informed by my work, because I was able to, from that viewpoint, I was able to anticipate that there would exist certain kinds of emotional attachments to words at a level that our aware mind would not be aware of, and yet would nonetheless leak out. And indeed, I was correct. So basically, when I first started the work, it was a guess. Does this actually exist? I think I'm reading it personally in certain forums and seeing this kind of thing going, but I need to aggregate it in large mass, boil it down to see if I'm correct about this. And indeed, I was. Now, my understanding of consciousness now is such that I'm quite convinced that all of our previous history as humans is in the process of being upset and overturned and expanded by let's call it a single event. It won't be that way. It won't be a single event, but a single occurrence. And that is that I think that humanity is on its way to connecting to a galactic, if not universal, quantum internet that is currently being populated now by millions of species and has maybe had millions of years of history in it. It exists now. It's out there working now for all of these other species, and humanity only needs to overcome some small technical hurdles, and we should be able to tie into that, what I call UNET, the universal internet. And this derives from the thinking about consciousness itself.
Let the force be with you, in a sense, Cliff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I'm actually going to put some money behind the idea and try and create a UNET modem for attaching to this universal network.
For those last couple of steps, do you think artificial intelligence is the key?
Okay, artificial intelligence, everybody, there's a major connotation issue, because a lot of people think of it as meaning a machine that can think. Machines can't think. The most they can do is replicate software and mimic some human activities around thinking. So in that sense, no. Okay. In the sense of expert systems, where I can use the computing systems to aid in natural language processing, translation, and that sort of thing, yes. But at the first point of departure here has to be the location, or discovering our entangled particle that we will use at a quantum level to actually be the gateway or bridge into the universal network. And for that, we'll probably end up using the quantum computers. What's really cool is IBM lets us use them for free. Microsoft has some approaches going where you can do some major simulations, work out all your code, and then you can, through the cloud, use IBM's quantum computer to do some of the calculations for you. So looks like all the balls are all lining up and getting put into their little triangle and ready for the break.
Amazing. Amazing. All right, you do that, Cliff, and I'm just going to watch Dancing with the Stars, okay? Because that's about all.
Okay, you're probably going to spend your time a whole hell of a lot better than I would.
Wow. Okay. I'm sorry, but I got to keep moving on. The next question comes from Peter. It said, Pete was in Hawaii a couple weeks ago. Lucky him, huh? And he was there during that infamous ballistic missile warning. It was a bit unnerving to say the least. Most people believe there had to be more than just a simple fat finger mistake. What do you think happened, Cliff?
There's data sets that show that there was something brought down. There's data out there you can find that would seem to correlate to a an actual physical device. Whether it was from North Korea or not is actually immaterial. It could have been a false flag, that sort of thing. The issue, though, I think, is USA-centric, not North Korea-initiated. The reason I say this is because most people are not aware of this. But the president of North Korea and South Korea are talking. The North Korean Olympic team marched with the South Korean Olympic team under a single Korean flag this year in the Winter Olympics. This only ever happened just the year before we have reunification. So when Eastern Germany and Western Germany shared the German flag for a Summer Olympics, it was 1 year later that the wall came down and there was reunification. And so also there's information about the USA political structure, administration at the military level that has been involved in these cross-border talks with the Koreas, and we know that China is also involved. So I don't suspect that war is an outgrowth of such kinds of activity unless by extreme accident or under manipulation, so to speak. So I think that actually the war dogs are calming down, and we're seeing evidence of that. So under the circumstances, if anything did get shot down around Hawaii, it might not have come from Korea.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's we've heard that. I've heard that from other sources. Dr. Jand has been talking about that. I will add, I've got one of the guys on the site that seems pretty astute in this kind of stuff. I saw a comment yesterday that said, maybe it's just coincidence, but the burn rate of a missile from North Korea to Hawaii would be 38 minutes. And this warning went out, and then it was 38 minutes later that the all clear was given. Again, maybe that's a coincidence, maybe not. But I'm just glad to hear that the suggestion of a peaceful outcome, because war would just be disastrous, obviously. The next question comes from Wisdom. This is pretty specific, so it may just be just your personal opinion, Cliff. He's wondering about when Charlie Lee sold all of his Litecoin. And he said he did so because there's so much big stuff coming, and he didn't want to be accused of being, pumping his own holdings, you know, which would be really unique in the financial industry, you know, given Henry Blodgett and all those people from years past. Anyway, he just wants to know if you have any knowledge if he sold all of his Litecoin on the open market, or if he sold it to a single entity, because he'd be curious to know what you think.
I think there were some large tranches that were sold, but I don't think it went to a single party. And there was also a lot that was fed into the open market, so to speak, at a retail level. And from the language that we've got from Charlie, I would have a tendency to support the viewpoint that he's honest, that he's not disingenuous about this. And I also understand what he's talking about, because and then here's another part of this. He's not from the financial system.
Right.
We're talking techies here. And now on to a surprisingly shocking degree, you have a bunch of techies that are on their way to becoming the richest people on the planet. And a lot of these individuals are very emotionally unprepared for such a status, never wanted it. Their goal was to be disruptors and to pursue a revolution within the social order, and rather than self-aggrandizement and so on. So I suspect that Charlie's motives were 100% pure, because I see it in other people that also find themselves at the top at that level. And they're really, you know, like the Pineapple Fund, right? The, I don't know if you're aware of that, the major, it's a cryptocurrency benefactors guild or group or something, all right? Okay. And it has millions and millions of dollars because of very wealthy cryptocurrency guys that are funding all of these kinds of charitable activities, as well as positive social activities through these funds. And so a lot of these individuals are in the process, even as young people, in spending out, building out the cryptos into the population through various different means. One of them, or some of these individuals, are operating under a particular white paper that's in private circulation about how to radically transform the populace by getting the cryptocurrencies out into the, let's call it the economic substrata, and bypass what used to be the management and middle class area. And I think the Pineapple Fund is an outgrowth of that understanding. So imagine the situation where the people in Haiti were basically gifted cryptocurrencies to the level where a large portion of that population became what we would think of as a global middle class. That's going to be totally transforming of that that social order, and from there it'll branch out.
That's just wonderfully encouraging. You know, I mean, it's a, it's the old conundrum. I mean, it's gone on this way for centuries. How do you fight the man without becoming the man? Right?
Correct. 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 Yeah. You look in the mirror, you better be really good with them eyes. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Dan has something he wants to know. This is, again, I told you these questions jump around. Sure. Cliff is an advocate of carbon 60. I don't know what that is, but he said, it has life extension properties. Is it really safe to ingest as it is as an industrial lubricant?
It's safe to ingest if you know what you're doing. Okay. You can't go buy industrial lubricant grade
C60.
No. What you do is you put it into, it has to be put into digestible oil, because the effective way to get it is through the liver into, and so that's what the liver does, is assist in processing the oils. Yeah. C60 is an inert, spherical, monomolecular form of carbon. It's carbon 60. There's 60 carbon atoms all clumped together, and they look like a soccer ball. It has a very unique, some unique properties, one of which is it can't be crushed once it's in that shape. It can be damaged by light and some other things, but physical pressure doesn't crush it. So it becomes an incredible lubricant. So at 99.5% pure, they pump the stuff into oil rigs. They pump it into anywhere you got bearing surfaces as a dry powder, and it is an incredible lubricant. But at 99.9% pure, put in oil, the C60 is ingested. It goes through your liver into all parts of your bodies, and it grabs hydrogen atoms. The hydrogen atoms can fit through the lattice work of the C60 molecule. They are, because the C60 is carbon, it can pass through the all of the blood barriers, blood brain, blood spleen, blood liver, and even into the capillaries. And so the C60 transports hydrogen there. The hydrogen gloms onto the result, the what they call free radicals, but which really are various different forms of oxygen, what we call oxidative stress residue. And the hydrogen turns the oxygen in the hydrogen peroxide that you've built up in the mitochondria of the cell, turns it into water, and you pee it out. And so you take out all of the free radicals and the oxidative stress. The other part of it is C60 itself is a carbon molecule, has an affinity for metals, and so it pulls out all of the toxic metals that you're breathing from the chemtrails and ingesting from all of your food sources and so on over the course of your life. Mm-hmm. So it totally cleans out your body. Now, here's the thing. We don't know for sure that it will extend human life, but we know that the studies done with rats showed at least a doubling, if not a tripling, of effective lifespan and maintaining a youthful appearance and health through that entire lifespan. Wow. And the only reason the rats died was because they were euthanized for the study. So we have no knowledge. We have no knowledge of how long they would actually have lived. Okay. The basis of the study was that as soon as the first member of the control group of rats died, they stopped giving C60 to the other rats. And then over the course of time, euthanized them under various different conditions. The other thing about C60 is that it is very greatly anti-radioactive nucleotide. So in a sense that it likes to glom on to radioactive material and again, strip it from your body. It has a half-life of about 10 hours in your system. You start excreting the stuff in about 10 hours with heavy metals and in any kind of cellular crud attached in your system, so you have to maintain it. It has tremendous health responses on individuals that are anecdotal. Bear in mind, anybody that's messing about with the stuff is doing it as a self-experimenter with their 6-foot rat, and we don't have a whole lot of, we have no sanctioned medical studies on humans that have been published that I'm aware of. But it's kick-ass stuff. Let me tell you, it is kick-ass.
I mean, I've only got 10 or 15 minutes left, obviously, but where do you get this stuff? And what do you just like put a quarter tablespoon in with your olive oil when you're frying up some veal parmesan?
No. It comes in oil. It's incredibly, C60 itself is a really weird dry molecule that is just incredibly difficult to get dissolved into anything. You cannot dissolve it in any water-based material. Okay.
It has the structure of it.
Has to be stirred into oil with a magnetic stirrer over a course of a couple of weeks. I get mine from, and you have to do it under conditions of a specific heat and no light. Now, I get mine from C60 purplepower.com because they have a version in avocado oil, and that's most harmonious for my particular physiology. But you can
so
get it
comes that way.
Right. And you can get it at Live Longer Labs. And I just take a tablespoon a day, although you need to get saturated first. I've been doing it long enough that my system is now saturated, so I just maintain it. But initially, you'd take maybe a third of a shot glass every day, twice a day, and to build up. And then you'd slack off to about a tablespoon a day, and you're good. You just take a tablespoon in the morning like a tonic.
Yeah. Okay. And then wash it down with a gin and tonic, and it will all be good. Okay.
No. Then you wash it down with an apple. Because
you're kind of adding back the stuff you want to take out, for God's sake.
But an apple brings in, it's one of the products of digesting an apple is vast quantities of hydrogen gas that are created in the gut. And that's what you want is the hydrogen gas. Hydrogen passes out of the body in about 10 minutes, literally leaks right out of us because the molecule is so small, unless it's captured by C60. And then it can go all the way through to all the cells in your system. I've had people that have thrown away their reading glasses, people that have gotten rid of hearing aids. We have people with back pain and all of that kind of stuff, all kinds of pains that are reported as being gone miraculously within mere hours of taking the stuff. It is not a drug. It causes no changes to your body.
Right.
It's carbon. Right. And you get C60 every time you eat barbecue, although you just don't get it at a quantity that does you any good. C60 is an interesting stuff. The C60 molecule was used by all the cyanobacteria in the early formation of Earth to resist the huge levels of radiation that were there at the time.
Fascinating. I had no idea. All right. I've got to try to kind of burn through the rest of these questions, if you don't mind,
sure.
Cliff. Let's see. Dan wants to know, are there some new uses of silver you see in the coming years? And are we eventually going to transition away from airplanes into more of a flying saucer type of aircraft?
I sure hope so. TSA and I are not friends. So I don't get to go flying about. But we've got a lot of new forms of uses of silver. What we're waiting for at this point temporally in terms of our temporal markers may occur this year, but it may occur next year or maybe early 2020. But it's a new way of dealing with the transmission of electricity across silver as a media, where the media would be flattened. So it'd be like one molecule or two molecules deep of silver spread over, say, a plastic lattice that would then allow you to intelligently direct electricity in a field. And this will allow us to do things like, anti-gravity forklifts. And so you'd have an anti-gravity forklift that, you know, could operate off of a couple of double A batteries and wouldn't require these huge batteries, those sorts of things, because of what we'll be able to do with electricity, because our knowledge of electricity is going to take a big jump up. And one of the things that's really interesting is that silver has two naturally occurring forms. The minor form of it, which is, I don't know the percentage, but I think it's about 18 or 20% of the overall silver that's found natively, has a unique property for the transmission of electricity across the skin. And we'll understand now that wires aren't necessary. The inner part of the copper wire does us no good because the electricity doesn't go in copper, it goes around the outside of it. And so this could lead to us to an entirely different form of the use of silver. And I think it will lead to countries naming silver to be a strategic metal and thus not able to be exported.
Fabulous. This is remarkable. Okay. Three left. What does Cliff think about the crypto Digibyte?
Yeah, Digibyte. Yeah, I like Digibyte. It's a good coin. It's going to have some, it's got some surprises coming for us in the data sets over these next 2 years. It would appear to be more towards the end of 2018 than the beginning of it. And then a reoccurrence or temporal echo of that effect to be seen in early 2019. So such a thing might be some kind of an announcement about Digibyte or some threshold or something that is discussed in 2018 and then actually occurs in 2019. So it's going to be one of the keepers, one of the long holding coins.
Fabulous. All right. Now here's Cliff. This is a great example of what fun it is to be a subscriber. Cause here's us. I mean, this is about as specific as it gets. Kelly is thinking about buying a property on the Great Lakes. And so wants to know if you have any Great Lakes specific data, like water level, salination, invasive species, stuff like that.
I get more of that through the weather side of things. And yes, we've got a bunch of data sets that are, well, actually the East Coast should be experiencing the first of these new kind of events, these new kind of storms. It should occur, I think, from like the 28th of this month through like the 4th or 5th of February. It's going to be an abnormal storm in the sense it's not going to be an Atlantic kind of a storm. And it's going to be very cold, very windy, and huge amounts of rain, like almost like Pacific Northwest levels of rain.
Wow.
And it'll go from the Great Lake. And what's actually going to happen is that storms from the Great that will go across the Great Lakes into the Ohio River Valley will connect with moisture and storms coming up from the Gulf, and then they'll blow in towards the East Coast. And it according to our data sets, it's going to be relatively slow moving and continually raining in a northwest kind of a fashion, where, you know, it's an inch an hour sort of a thing for days. And so those kinds of storms are going to continue. This is part of our new ice age conditions that we're moving into. Great Lakes is an excellent area. I like the lakes myself. We don't have anything about huge levels of salination. The way long data shows that we're going to get a giant earthquake at some point that will cause the lakes to drain down because of the reallocation of river flows towards an inland sea somewhere in North America. Wouldn't surprise me, it'd be around New Madrid.
Yeah, New Madrid, sure. And I tell you, I check the GFS and the North American model, weather models, almost every day during the wintertime. There is a rather interesting storm setup. It comes in around the 2nd, 3rd of February. So it's
there we go. Then, yeah.
Interesting to follow that now with a different perspective. Lastly, I got one last question from Gabe. And we'll end with this one. When do you envision the climax over the current crisis involving the struggle and obvious treason within the deep state?
2021, maybe, if we're talking about the cessation and the falling of the emotional values thereafter. So I would think 2021. I think it's going to erupt in March of this year, but it isn't going to settle down. We're not going to have a pinnacle for a number of years after that, because it's just going to take us a while to work through all of the crud. I think we're going to be approaching something that most people don't grasp, and that's the truth and reconciliation that's required, the way that they had in Africa. And those take a lot of number of years as you have to ferret out and face this stuff and then back off from it, and, you know, and then face it again and go at it again. It's just going to take a while.
That makes sense to me too. That leads us, my friend, into what we call the final four, which, you know, we always kind of wrap up on kind of a lighter note. And since these are just four rather simple, quick questions, you can usually answer with just a one word or a sentence, something like that.
Okay, we'll try.
So if you're ready, we'll go. And by the way, I got to tell you, this has been fascinating. I've interviewed some brilliant people before in the last 7 years. I always joke with Chris Martinson and tell him he's the smartest guy I know. I think you give Chris Martinson a run for his money.
Oh, don't say that. I like listening to him.
Oh, my God. Yeah, geez, Louise, Cliff, I could just sit here and just ask you questions and just listen to you talk. It's like I kind of add this. I've gotten to know this guy, Professor Stephen F. Cohen, over the last year or so, who is an eminent scholar in Russian history and Russian studies. And when I talked to him a couple weeks ago, I said, first thing I told him, I said, thank you. I feel like I've taken a graduate level course in Russian history and Russian studies by listening to you. And it's just so much fun just to listen to brilliant people and just sit back and listen. And that's what I've been able to do today. And it's just been fabulous. So thank you.
Sure. Glad I could help.
All right. So the first question of your final four, I guess in a sense, kind of follows up on that last question that we just discussed and how long it will take to weed out the deep state and all that kind of stuff. And it also ties back into what you mentioned earlier about Korea. Just simply, who lasts longer in power, Trump or Kim Jong-un?
Oh, there's no question. Kim Jong-un is a short timer. He's he might be around, but in terms of power, it's being taken away from him by the day.
Okay.
So I would no question there.
Okay. Next, what is the last movie that you saw in a theater?
So long ago, I couldn't tell you for sure.
It would
have been in the 80s.
I snuck in a little On Golden Pond reference for you, Cliff.
I wouldn't have watched that anyway. I only favor comedies, and the dumber and more foreign comedies are my favorite, right?
Well,
but the last time I've seen a film in a theater, I couldn't even. It had to be in the 80s, and it'd probably take me an hour to search through the memory to come up with something.
All right. What is the more calamitous risk going forward? Nuclear war, major earthquake, or societal breakdown?
I would have to say earth expansion event, because it's bigger than earthquakes per se. But if we were to enlarge that, that's our biggest challenge. The nuclear stuff is going to be a problem, but as we get into our understanding of electricity, we'll get to the point where we will be able to neutralize radiation. It won't be easy, but we'll be able to do it. That looks to be about 2023 as a very real practical technology. So I'm not particularly worried about the nukes if we make it that far.
Yeah, if we can make it that far to neutralize, no pun intended, I guess, to neutralize those weapons would be awfully beneficial for the future of mankind. No doubt about that. Lastly, and this might be even the most important question I ask you, at least for me personally today, who's going to win the Super Bowl?
I have no idea. I don't ever follow sports, and I deliberately exclude
them. Shit, Cliff!
I'm sorry.
I'm going to Vegas next week. That's the only reason I had you on, for God's sake.
Well, damn, guy. I'm sorry. You should have asked first, because look, I can't put sports in there and deliberately have to exclude all the references to them because it skews my data sets. The reason it does is because the choices are always binary and there's always a lot of conscious thought put into it that masks the leaked emotions. So, and I don't follow the millionaires that throw the balls back and forth or any of that. And so I would have no idea who is even contending.
Right.
I'm sorry, I'm just ignorant of that, you know.
And lastly, I just had one other thing that I thought of as we're going along. How the heck do you do that? I mean, the amount of computing power that you must have access to, is it all through the cloud and accessing?
No, I don't. I don't do the cloud. I really should. I'm really tempted at this point, even though I'm not a young man, I'm tempted to rewrite all of my code in Python because of all the new tools that are available. My computing power comes from a what I call a server garden. It's not really a server farm. I've maintained my own servers since 1993, and have grown them over time. The real big deal for us anymore is not the computing power per se in the machinery, so much as it is the ability to read and write to disk, because we're handling lots and lots and lots of data.
Yeah,
So
that's all
I've
grown.
got two Citrix arrays, fully maxed out, with drives that were running to maintain all of this and do all the work on it. And the computing power is handled by a couple of, I think we've got like seven servers on site. And then I've got another couple of them up here. I've got a couple of parallel processors, like the old Sequent machinery. It's a clone called a Weiss, and those form the basis of it. So parallel processing really helps.
Wow, I have a MacBook.
Hey, these days I've got more processing power in my phone than I had in my first two servers.
I guess that's true. I got to tell you, Cliff, this has been fascinating, and I want to thank you so much for your time and all that you do. And I mean, it just is just one, just really intriguing stuff. Again, Cliff High, halfpasthuman.com is where you're going to go now and learn more and consider subscribing to the service, because it's just fascinating. And Cliff, I hope that as we barrel through what is going to be a wildly unpredictable year, this 2018, I hope we can do this again at some point, because I think there's a lot more rocks we need to peek under.
Yeah, happy to. It's been fun.
All right. Well, thank you, my friend. I'll give you the rest of the day off. And to everybody out there, I hope you've enjoyed this. In fact, I'm sure you have. And thank you for being a part of it. And we will do this again soon.